Herzlich willkommen zum Modelleinsatz, der mathematische Podcast aus Karlsruhe mit Gudrun Täter und Sebastian Ritterbusch.
Welcome, Nadia and Musa. I am back in my office with two guests, and I think it's the first time for a very long time, I would think even before Corona. So it's really like several years I didn't have guests in my office for having a podcast conversation. Of course, we had podcast conversation, but very often we had them remotely. So Nadia Klein and Musa Kasem Speti are my colleagues here at KIT, and they are working at the Karlsruhe Scientific Computing Center. And maybe the most intelligent way to start our conversation is to give you the word to tell our listeners what you are doing in your research. And maybe we start with Musa, because he's just laughing and feels very comfortable starting out.
Sure, maybe I would start by thanking you, Gudrun, for the nice and warm introduction. Also, thanks, Nadia, for being here and doing this podcast with me. And thanks, of course, to the listeners for tuning in. So I'm Musa. I joined Nadia's lab as an associated member in 2023. Later also as a postdoctoral researcher, or maybe right now in 2024. I pursued my PhD at the TU Berlin while also working as an AI research scientist at the Continental AI Lab in Berlin. And my research primarily focuses on deep learning, developing uncertainty-based automated labeling methods. Maybe that will be clear after what that means, because probably the listeners, if they have no experience in that field, will not understand much. But it's about object detection and autonomous driving, how we can make it reliable, efficient, and so on. And prior to that, I earned my master's in mechatronics engineering from TU Darmstadt. And maybe I would give the word here to Nadia to give a broader image of the group.
Yeah, because she's the leader of your research group.
And that she is indeed, yes.
Yeah, thank you, Musa, for this kind introduction. Also, thanks to Gudrun for inviting us. It's a great opportunity. My name is Nadia, and I'm professor at the KIT since August 2024, based at the Scientific Computing Center, where I lead the Methods for Big Data group. By training, I'm a mathematician, but over the years, I have transitioned more in the area of statistics, and now we work on method development, actually, at the intersection of statistics and machine learning. The group has now relatively broad areas where we work on, spanning from theoretical math or theoretical analysis over statistical methodology to the application area, but there is one method that actually brings us together, and this is the field of Bayesian statistics. So Bayesian statistics allows to include prior knowledge to quantify uncertainty, and also in certain aspects, in particular in the context of machine learning, to bring some insight into black boxes. And we try to leverage Bayesian methods in these areas, and thereby our aim is to kind of combine the best of both worlds, so that of machine learning, which has the power of being very reliable and successful in performing prediction, and statistics, where we have a probabilistic understanding of what we are doing, and thereby giving us the opportunity to conduct, for instance, risk assessment. And in that regard, KIT is actually a very strong research environment. On the one hand, I believe we bring some expertise that hasn't been covered before. And on the other hand, through Helmholtz, for instance, there's a lot of very interesting application areas, and also for us, new application areas to explore.
Yes, I was laughing slightly because in Musa's first word there, we had all the buzzwords of today. Yes, big data, machine learning, exactly. Deep learning, and things like that. Yes, and with Nadia, it's also so for me as a mathematician and as a mathematician who has been working in this field for a very long time. Machine learning is still some kind of statistics, and very often people nowadays coming new to this field, they think this is computer science. And so that they don't think of mathematics in this context. So this is kind of a bridge, so to say. And in your introduction, what you are doing, this bridge, at least to me, was really very obvious. Yeah, because you clearly say this is statistics and we use Bayesian methods in order to kind of improve this step by step, bringing new knowledge to the system. As we are doing with knowing something under certain conditions.
I think also throughout the podcast, people will understand more about where these two fields are separated and how they can be joined together, I think. Yeah. Because from an engineering perspective, I wouldn't necessarily consider it as statistics, right? But as you said, that changes then.
Yeah. And this is also because you said your background is mechatronics study course. And for me, this is also one of the fields where this is an interesting field because this, so to say, I always try to avoid artificial intelligence because I don't, it's more like a machine learning, which I like if you say it like that, is a ground where people are very much interested in the method, also from the engineering background. And then, of course, you see this as a toolbox and not so much as, you know, with my thinking, I see this as something in my field of where I make sense of certain rasters. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so statistics is one way to say what I'm doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So what would you say is the role of statistics in your work and the role of statistics in applied mathematics in your field where you apply your research?
Yeah, sure. So the role of statistics for me, that's a very big question. I think that's also the reason I'm here. Maybe at this point, I would like also to mention one thing, which is Nadia mentioned the opportunities that Helmholtz offers. Yeah. And I would like to state that I'm also part of a very interesting project, which I don't know if you can call it a project, but it's a program more like it. So Helmholtz pilot program, Core Informatics, also known as KICKIT. And there it's an initiative focused basically on advancing fundamental research in informatics, which is what I'm currently doing as part of that program. And that is exactly what I targeted when I joined KIT, because as I said before, I was in an AI research lab at a company. I was doing an industrial PhD. And there I sensed, which is something we will talk about later, I think, but I sensed that there is very much a lack of focus on fundamental research and the methods themselves and more on the application side. And the cool thing about Nadia's lab, the Methods for Big Data lab, is that we have both aspects in that lab. And there, the statistics role for my particular research will be in mainly giving the models, the machine learning models that I use, the capability of saying they don't know, of knowing their own uncertainty, and not only giving you very confident estimations of whatever is the use case that they deal with. That this will be the general scope, I would say.
Hmm.
But I think Nadia has many more applications in that sense and much more to expand on that, right?
Well, thanks, Musa. I think you touched already pretty well on what I agree on as well. So from my perspective, machine learning is often purely algorithmic driven and made by computer scientists. And what misses there, or where statistics, in my point of view, can make an important contribution is making those systems more reliable, trustworthy, and also giving them a notion of how certain is my system or algorithm with the prediction that it makes. I think we agree that there's many applications, safety critical ones like autonomous driving, personalized medicine, where making mistakes or errors is really costly in several aspects. So we need to be confident about the decisions that we make.
Yeah. And so, the standard way algorithmic learning was introduced was more like when we as human beings don't really understand what is the reason for something.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just want to match patterns, then we let the computer do the matching. And of course, there's not really like some inner reason, or you cannot really say why things come out. And so if we... Sometimes we are happy with what's coming out because it gives us something to think about as humans and interpreting things, maybe, or just taking it as the best answer there is. But of course, this leaves this big hole you were talking about, Nadia, no? That we don't know where this comes from and what contributed. And if we would change the data slightly in a certain aspect, would this change the result absolutely or slightly? That's something which I'm... with my students, I'm always asking them about stability.
No, it's a very important point, actually, in our research point. As well. Yes.
And so this is, I consider this to be a deeply mathematical question, but of course, in this context, it's also very important.
I think this even translates to, I mean, the field I'm in is mostly also computer vision, and most papers present your results on one use case, and they don't even train multiple models with different strategies and actually show you that, as you said, it scales, it's stable, the results that you're getting are actually trustworthy, which is also, I think, something Bayesian, in this case, deep learning helps with, where you get the uncertainty automatically, and then you have more of this customization of how the model should behave, but also the understanding of how it behaves under certain data shift and so on. I think that that's also the direction we would like to see research goes into in our field, I would say, or me personally.
Yes, and of course, it's just, in the end, it's just a question how you think about your algorithms. Is the algorithm just for finding anything and then just to make a happy dance? Or is the algorithm for something where you have to know that it's trustworthy and maybe even within certain bounds? This would be optimal. We can ask for that even if we don't achieve it.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes. And so if we want to make a difference between just having any algorithm which works with machine learning, what is then deep learning in particular in your framework, so to say?
So you would like us to differentiate between deep learning and a standard algorithm?
Yeah.
That's a very good question. Maybe I can start and then you could take over. So deep learning, in the sense, is a very complex algorithm where the steps are less visible than one that you would write by hand, especially when we're dealing with foundational models nowadays and models that are getting bigger and bigger. And so there is not really the understanding that you mentioned or the explainability of what's going on. And so I would say it's just a type of black box algorithm that you would give it sufficient data, hope for the best, tweak some parameters, see what works, what doesn't. So I would say it's more of a empirical, heuristical approach to developing an algorithm. What do you think, Nadia?
Yeah, I totally agree. Maybe one aspect one can add is, and that differs it also maybe from statistical models, is that through the way a deep architecture is constructed, it's able to kind of capture some non-linear complex interactions that we may not be able to describe with some simple mathematical objects, for instance, which gives us on the one hand quite some power, but on the other hand, one also knows that deep learning needs a lot of data to be trained on and to deliver something meaningful. There's a lot of hyperparameters to tune, and there's no theory available that tells us how we can do this in a meaningful and generalizable way. So that makes it really specific to certain use cases, as Musa also said, which I think is a problem or critical if you cannot generalize a method.
And also, that's also my old mind speaking, because in a way, this working with neural networks and algorithmic machine learning things, it's quite an old story. This started already in the 60s of the last century, but then we didn't really have the big data, which nowadays we have a plenty. It's more like choosing from all the stuff we have to have the meaningful databases and then to do these new things, which the ideas go back so long, but now we can do it. Also, the computers are available, which were not available then.
Exactly, the hardware helps. But I think you touched on a very important point, which is the data itself. I mean, so there's a lot of focus on models, and we spoke about models so far, but the data is one aspect, I think, that a lot of basically the research community just dismiss, using the same data sets that were published 10, 13 years ago. And because it's less rewarding from a sense for companies to give their data out, right? Because they have no actual benefit from providing their data. Then you have most of the models that are provided, but without the data that was trained, used for training. And I think this is one thing where our group also works on publishing, in a sense, data, also on developing models that are less data dependent. Also that there we provide that fully transparent code base, model base, and so on. And I think that's also a very important aspect in doing research, especially for us as methods for big data, yeah. I guess.
Yes. So beforehand, we were talking about using also Bayesian ansatz for trying to make the algorithms more trustworthy and putting, so to say, more knowledge step by step as we get it. Is it possible to also use Bayesian approaches in deep learning context? And how would you do that? And what would be advantages, disadvantages maybe even?
Yeah, you can do this. And that's actually, we are working in several projects on this. So one example is that of autonomous driving, where we employ so-called continual learning. So in autonomous driving, it's important to know that many situations are kind of simple. So imagine going on a motorway. It's a pretty simple situation, yeah, because most of the time you just go straight. But the more rule you get, the more unique the situations are. And hence, you have far less data available in such edge cases, even though those cases are the important ones where you would like to improve your system, because here autonomous driving isn't working that well. And what we try to do is, for instance, we include prior information through available data that is usually not used. For instance, information coming from maps,
yeah,
that we include in the first step as prior information, and then we conduct a continual learning approach. So basically it means that today's posterior is tomorrow's prior, so that in that way we gain information and thereby data without having to collect new data. And it makes our method more data efficient, for instance.
Would you have one example where you apply your methods and maybe as clear as possible how you apply them?
For data efficiency, for example, yeah, since Nadia mentioned data
just
efficiency.
Because, you know, I think in principle it's, at least for the people interested enough to listen up to now, it's clear what this is in principle about, but it would be nice to have one case where you can really focus on.
Yeah, sure. So that's also a very good question, because when I started my PhD and I used to tell my friends or like my family, I'm working on, let's say, automated labeling or data efficient approaches, they would be like, but why? You have supervised learning. Just give the model the data, train it. And they wouldn't understand that there's so many aspects or like frameworks like self-supervised, semi-supervised, active learning, which is something me and Nadia also work on. And there, one example would be using also the Bayesian perspective. So, for example, estimating the uncertainty of the model. You can look at it as telling the model, just communicate with me, tell me exactly which data samples you would need, which data samples you are struggling with. So I would actually put effort in labeling. So you need to label data to train models. So I would label exactly the data that the model tells me it requires to fill the knowledge gap that it is currently trying to do, basically. And there you would take this uncertainty that the model is giving you, and then you would use it to select the samples, train the model, and the model would label the rest, so to say, with the knowledge gap that has been continuously filled. It also goes in the direction of, in a sense, continual learning. That's an iterative process where the model learns and then you know what it doesn't know, feed that back to it and repeat it, in a sense. That would be an example. And then, for example, for object detection, when you want to deploy object detectors in cars, there you can be much faster on the road updating your models when you use these data efficient models and when you use Bayesian deep learning, in a sense. I don't know if you would like to add something on that. No use case for data efficiency.
It's also a question, when you're a researcher, where do you want to go in the next, let's say, 5 or 10 years? So what are hopes and plans where your theories can be improved?
I think there's quite a number of applications on the one hand, where modern analysis would benefit from maybe fusing statistical and statistical knowledge or statistical approaches and machine learning. One of them is, for instance, healthcare, where Bayesian models can help quantify uncertainty in medical diagnosis, for instance. I mentioned already autonomous driving, where Bayesian models play an important role for improving safety. And finance is, for instance, also an important area where we need appropriate risk management. I think there's also computational aspects where maybe statistics can learn from machine learning, because often statistical models, they may have good theoretical properties, but traditionally the methods how you would actually estimate the models or the estimators, they can't really handle a lot of data. They break down, and that's where we as statisticians or mathematicians can maybe learn from the computational perspective. Do you have any other aspects?
So where I would see research going, or where would I like it to go? Because those are two completely different things. Yeah. I would say that the direction it's going to, it's not necessarily the one I would like, at least the field I'm in, to be focused on, because I would like more explainability, interpretability, robustness, exactly what we focus on. Whereas mostly, especially coming from companies, knowing how they work, what their goals are, it's more performance-oriented. But I do think that as we do in our lab and the collaborations that we do also, whether with industrial partners or also other groups at different universities, allows us to show that there is a lot of meaningful contributions to be done, even if it's not directly, let's say, money-wise, you don't see the benefit directly for companies, which is also why they don't focus on it, but it's necessary to guarantee a useful use of machine learning in general. So I would like to see more of maybe what we do, which sounds like I'm self-promoting, but why we do it, basically. Yeah,
because, you know, I'm always, you know, we are also researchers because it's like a game, so to say. It makes us happy to see the new results. But of course, we also have the responsibility. And so just being happy about nice results, which we can't explain, this feels awkward, at least to me.
Yeah, I guess also we are, let's say, taking the lower pay compared to industry, and also the longer working hours. So we need to feel that our work has some sort of meaning, I guess, also. Otherwise, then the motivation is not there. So nice results are not everything, is exactly what I would say, yeah.
So Nadia, at the beginning, you were saying that you liked to start here in Karlsruhe at KIT because through the Helmholtz part of KIT, you have special opportunities. Would you maybe expand on that a little bit? Because, of course, people always think they have an idea about the university, how it's working. And in this aspect, Karlsruhe is a little bit special because we are only half a university and the other half is science which is done with very, very big facilities, so to say.
Yes, good question. I'm not sure I can answer it yet, actually, because I feel I still have to learn how it works, KIT. But the motivation for me, and I think that still holds, is that when I was coming here, then I knew that KIT is special, and then it offers this Helmholtz part where we can do large-scale research in application areas that are important for society. So I have worked with many practitioners from different fields, but so far I didn't really have the opportunity to work that closely with core areas like those related to climate change, mobility, which are the important topics in the future. And what I have found in the past that the methods that we develop, that they found interest in many disciplines. So I'm now really curious to see whether and how the methods that we work on can be also developed or tailored for those specific fields.
Yeah, I can see that, because it's kind of overwhelming if you come here and you see all the groups and also the culture is also slightly different if you are more on the university side and more on this other, on the other side. But it's always interesting to have both worlds kind of. And in the end, everybody is very happy to talk about what they are doing. And so just listening in can be a first step, which is always working. And then you have to see if something else can be done. Also, I think quite a few people will ask themselves if they want to become someone doing deep learning or machine learning, things like that, which are so modern nowadays. What would be your ideas to tell them what study course to take and how to specialize maybe, or maybe where not to be too with a lot of problems in advance, being more open, I don't know. So because you were, Musa, you were starting out as an engineer, so I think there are many ways to do that. But maybe you have now have an idea, looking back, what you would tell your younger cousin.
Yeah, I get what you mean. It's a very interesting question. It's a very subjective question.
Of course, human beings. We may be subjective.
There's so many ways into deep learning, especially as you see nowadays with LLMs. Like someone using ChatGPT can teach themselves how to program Python and get into deep learning. But I would say if you actually want to do research in the field, then you definitely need to work on the fundamentals, understand the fundamentals. Otherwise, you could do some engineering. That's definitely not a question. But to meaningfully, as I said, I mean, meaningfully is also a broad term, but to do contributions that go beyond, let's say, usefulness of 2-3 months till someone beats whatever record you set with your method, you actually need to focus on the fundamentals. And this is where the role of, I would say, the one that you cannot replace, which is going through university with some courses that are related. And maybe one of the approach that I would recommend is to visit our courses here at KIT. Maybe you could say more about the courses we offer, Nadia.
Yes, I can. But maybe I would also like to add something on what you just mentioned. Because I think it's important maybe not just to study something because it's related to a latest trend or whatever, but maybe also to critically question not only what I want to do, but also where I see maybe a meaningful contribution in the future. And in that regard, if someone is thinking of doing either machine learning or statistics, I think it needs a good balance of both. So theory, computational knowledge, and also how to apply this in practice. So having the curiosity maybe also to look across discipline boundaries. My feeling is that that's where we need to go. And then, with regards to lectures that we offer, actually, we are offering courses in Bayesian statistics. So we have now a course on advanced Bayesian data analysis.
Just laughing because it's kind of surprising.
Yeah, it's really surprising, isn't it? So we study fundamental concepts of Bayesian statistics, including parametric and non-parametric approaches. So it is also somewhat theoretical. But then we also study on how we can actually perform Bayesian computation, going through the centuries, covering Markov-Chain Monte Carlo simulations, but also more modern hybrid methods, including variational inference. And then we also have a number of applications in high-dimensional data, for instance. And as a follow-up to that lecture, we offer a seminar with a selected topic each semester.
Yeah. That for me, that's also kind of the gold standard, to have a lecture which specializes very much on what I want my students to know when they want to make a master's thesis with me, and then to give them time in a seminar to learn something on a special field they have to work on themselves, and then they find out if it's really for them or not. Yeah. What type of students take your courses? So what study course are they taking usually?
So I'm affiliated.
How is the mix maybe?
I'm affiliated with computer science. So most of the students are computer scientists, but the lectures are also open to mathematicians, also open to researchers from economics with a strong quantitative focus. So, for instance, there is the Wirtschaftsinformatik Studiengang and Wirtschaftsmathematik. And yeah, we are particularly keen on having more mathematicians actually in our lecture.
That's kind of funny because in my mind, if I'm studying computer science, I'm not expecting to do statistics and I won't
choose
the course. Yeah, but it could be, how this is connected to computer science might be interesting to find out. And then this is one possibility to do that.
The cool thing about our lab is that we have both. So, I mean, we also offer master theses that are pure deep learning. So you wouldn't be doing much statistics in the classical sense, but you can also work on cutting edge research on very, very interesting applications. And I think Nadia, with her experience with all the fields, whether it's computer science, deep learning, application oriented, statistics and so on, gives the group this unique capability of joining them under one roof, in a sense. And I think we have a very good setup right now as well at KIT with the people we have with regard to the different topics.
Yeah.
So we have a bit of everything. So it's
yeah, and different backgrounds of
exactly.
people working there, which helps in this field, yeah. So what is the aspect you would maybe want to talk about as last possibility during our conversation, which I forgot to ask?
Musa, yeah. One last thing I would say is...
You forgot to say, very good question.
Yeah, no, it's a very, very good question. All the questions are really good questions. I would say one thing, which is do not be afraid to go for whatever you think is interesting, as Nadia said, regardless of the trend. So I went from engineering to industrial PhD back to university in a statistics group, or let's say more of methods for big data group. And I learned something new, something interesting in each of these setups. And I would say just go where you think you will learn something that is challenging your current knowledge. Look for growth on a personal level, on a topic level. Try to seek basically new challenges. And there I think you will find the best type of research where you will, which will be the most rewarding for you. Also, I think most helpful for the community. And so I think it was a really good choice for me to join Nadia's lab. I would say these would be the last words for me.
Nadia, you also have the chance to say something which I forgot to ask.
I guess, first of all, I would like to thank you, Musa, for those kind words. Yeah, connected to this, and I think that makes also me usually quite enthusiastic in doing about the research, is that I very much enjoy working in interdisciplinary teams where different expertise come together. Because if this is really working well, then there are critical questions that you may not get if you are just working with mathematicians, for instance. But I also believe that bringing those different expertise and different views together, that this can really... Yeah, couple some expertise that can bring forward new things that would not be able to be developed just with one specific field. And I think that's where we are located, in a very very good field of tension, in a way that there can be a lot of things done when you have background from statistics and machine learning and you are open in really applying this to real problems.
I also have the experience that if you have these mixed groups, it's much easier to ask questions. Yeah, because you as a mathematician, for example, it's absolutely okay to ask about applicational parts. And then the people from the application parts, they ask the basic mathematics question. And then everybody dares to ask whatever.
That is really, really a good point. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. And it's also extremely helpful for the group members because they also get used to really answering these very basic questions in a way that others, not directly coming from the field, understand it. And that's also an important quality one should have as a researcher, I believe.
So then it's for me to thank you very much for taking the time to having this conversation in my office and to maybe restart the podcast taking place in my office again. Thank you.
Thank you,
Gudrun.